of controlling people's understanding of history and politics.
Wow. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, who knows, soon they'll start having their textbooks written in Texas.
Well, you know, I think there are a few countries that do this. I mean, I think that almost all of them are military dictatorships and some southern states. And I think that, you know, these are very bad examples.
Again, listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, we're talking about the huge protests that happened on Saturday in South Korea. Tens of thousands of folks marched in Seoul. Kejino, great to have you with us again. We'll stay on top of this. There's obviously more to come.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and thanks, members, for supporting KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. The time is 11 o'clock. Coming up next, it's Stage and Studio with host D-May Roberts. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus with host Andre Middleton. First, an announcement, and then we'll go right to Stage and Studio.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
I'm D-May Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music from Gilla Cuddy. Here is music at freemusicarchive.org. According to a 2011 Pew Research Center survey, more than 42% of American families have at least one step relative. Today, I feature Portland writer and editor Samantha Waltz, who has explored what it means to be a step family from so many different perspectives in her book, Blended, Writers on the Step Family Experience. It's a collection of stories from writers from Portland and throughout the country. We'll talk with Samantha Waltz about creating this collection and Portland writer and editor Jessica Page Morrell, one of the contributors to Blended. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm D-May Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio are Portland writers and editors Samantha Waltz. Hello.
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 Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. And Jessica Page Morrell. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Morrell.
That's what I thought.
Like the mushrooms.
Well, Jessica Page Morrell, welcome both to Stage and Studio. It's so good to have you both here.
Lovely to be here.
Samantha, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Blended, Writers on the Step Family Experience. It came out this year, and it's about what it means to be a step parent or a stepchild or sibling. And, you know, you first got the idea for a book, for this book, when you were working as a family therapist. Is that correct?
I first realized what a huge issue it is, I'm not sure issue's the exact word, but the particular needs that blended families have. When I was working as a family therapist, because I found out through teaching workshops, especially as well as with individual families, that they have a lot of challenges that nuclear families don't have. And traditional families have plenty of challenges. I'm not saying they don't, but step families then add other issues like visitation and grieving, et cetera.
It's a unique set of challenges.
It is. And then on top of that, each family has a different configuration and is unique.
Well, so you know, tell us about the journey from the time you decided to create this anthology of personal stories, because you got writers from a lot of Portland writers and a lot of mm-hmm. Northwest writers, but also from around the country
and Canada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us about that journey from the time you decided to do this, that impetus, you're like, I think I'm going to put this together, to when you started gathering these stories.
I started getting serious about doing an anthology when my friend, who Jessica actually knows, Marcia Gerhart, said we should do an anthology. I'd published in a lot of anthologies, but not put one together. And we were talking about our adult stepchildren, and we had assumed going into our marriages that adult stepchildren, there would be like automatically everything would be fine. And you're still forming a lot of relationships with a lot of different dynamics. And so we were saying we should do an anthology, and then Marcia chose to work on her novel, and I chose to go ahead with a series of proposals. I always wanted it to be a sealed press book. I just feel like it's such an excellent press for this topic, and so I worked with...
So did you pitch it to Sealed Press?
So I pitched it to Sealed Press.
Oh, well, that's excellent. And so that sort of moved things along then. So did you put out a public call then?
And then I put, at the same time that I developed a proposal for them, so I had calls for submissions on my website that I already had, pathsofthought.com, and on Watercooler and some other websites. And then I formed a page. The blended page was a former stepping up anyway.
How long was this journey, though?
So the journey from beginning to end, like end meaning because it's still going on. The publication of the book from idea to publication was nearly 4 years.
Wow. That is commitment.
Well, it's really important, and then writers need time to respond and to work on their stories. I wanted a balance, and so I wanted new writers as well as very well-known writers.
Right. You wanted to get a good mix. And so how many people submitted their to be contributors?
I probably read 100 stories.
Mm. And you settled on 30.
30.
Wow.
And that's actually the most heartbreaking part, because they're wonderful stories, and I had to turn down wonderful stories because of what I needed for the way the book progresses.
You wanted certain themes, and what fit into those themes were what you ended up choosing then. And that is heartbreaking to read so many, because it sounds, if you look at the statistic, 42%, it seems like there are, more and more blended families, and that's going to continue. It's not going to go away. It's going to get bigger.
That's what the statistics look like,
right,
yes.
Right. So perhaps there's a blended two in the mix, but we'll talk about that. So you have a really moving forward that you wrote for the book. Do you mind reading a little bit about it and maybe give us a little intro into it?
Okay. This is the very beginning of the intro, and it relates my experience first coming to understand, before I had my own stepchildren, what a big deal it is. More than a decade ago, when I was working as a family therapist, I hadn't yet become part of a blended family. I looked into the faces of 30 step-parents gathered for my workshop on step-parenting, all of them leaning forward on folding chairs, eager for the new insights that I would surely offer to help them in their family relationships. True, this was the first workshop targeted to step-parents, but I wasn't expecting it to be that different from the others. I was so wrong. As I taped large sheets of butcher paper to the walls, I asked the participants to call out the issues they most wanted to discuss. The words flew at me from every part of the room: loyalty, jealousy, displacement, grief, guilt. How to deal with biological parents, visitation schedules, multiple parents at holidays, different surnames. What to do about expectations from a spouse, the kids, society, and oneself. How to set boundaries with children one wants desperately to win over. When I listened to the fears and heartache of these parents, I began to understand the unique difficulties they faced.
So out of that, you even, in your foreword, you're talking about different themes. So what are some of the themes? Because I noticed you start off with a section, like different sections that you wanted to cover. So coming together was the very first one. So what are, you're going through your your book. So what are the different themes that you're, or different sections that you have compiled?
In coming together, I talk about how couples, both same-sex and traditional couples, come together and first look at the idea of blending a family. And I go from first meeting through actually a honeymoon. We go on a honeymoon, a stepfamily honeymoon. Then I have a section on what writers learn about themselves. And these were such moving stories because it's been such a journey. And so the focus of that section is on the personal journeys of stepparents. I have a section on evolution that shows how different families work things out in different ways. And then sometimes it doesn't work out, but we have stories about where it does work out and how they manage that. And then we have a section on people looking back at this experience over the years, a chance to reflect on it and see what worked for them and how it's enriched their lives.
It's so thorough, you know, and well thought out. If you just joined us, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're featuring the book about stepfamilies called Blended: Writers on the Stepfamily Experience. It's edited by Samantha Waltz and explores stepfamilies through the perspectives of 30 stepparents and stepchildren. And you can find out, or 30 writers writing about stepparents and stepchildren. And you can find out more about the book at stageandstudio.org, where I have a link to Samantha's site, pathsofthought.com. And Samantha, I want to bring Jessica Morrell into this conversation in a moment about her contributed essay to the collection. But Blended also includes a foreword by Ariel Gore, and she writes about her own experiences as a parent of a child who is step-parented by her partner. And she wonders how much better it would be if step-families could treat each other as human instead of as generic players in some preconceived notion of what a family's supposed to be. So I thought that was a very profound statement there. How much does that question run through the bulk of the stories, do you think, in Blended?
I think a lot of the stories, if they don't explicitly address that, do address that, because we come in as stepmoms or stepdads a lot of times with the child having a preconceived idea because of this whole evil stepmother, evil stepfather kind of thing through society. So she brings that up. And then I think that mythology influences a lot of people. Step actually comes from astiapave, Old English, grieving. And we walk in with somebody having a whole history that creates expectations that we have to deal with.
Well, let's bring Jessica into this. What prompted you to write your piece in Blended? And that's titled Dispatches from the Neverland.
Well, I have been in two step-parenting situations. First, I was a single parent when my daughter was from 2 to 8. I met a man and married him. And the marriage was really difficult. We had really different values, especially parenting values. And after we divorced, I had first wanted to meet a man with other children because I only had one. And the more I stepped back and looked at our experiences, I decided I don't want to be part of a blended family no. again. It was just way too hard, and especially when there's different values. And then 5 years ago, I met my domestic partner, Jay, and at the time, his son was 20. And we were raised so vastly differently, and our children were raised so differently. It was such a shock to me, and I was angry at first, and because to me, I just saw such a bizarre way of handling situations that what had never occurred to me to do as a parent. I saw our parenting skills as being absolutely opposite. And I'd been a parent longer than him. My daughter is 20 years old, or almost 20 years older than his son. And I thought I had a lot of answers. And I learned a lot about just backing away.
Well, there were certain expectations too in the way people do things and how a family's supposed to work. And it seemed like in your story, you had to it wasn't so much adjusting, but just kind of figure out, you know, what you could do within mm-hmm. this situation.
Well, and that and acceptance, because we're so different. Compassion, because he deserves a lot of compassion for where he was in his life when I met him.
You're talking about your stepson.
Yes, he's doing much, much better now. And just trying to understand him as a person, you know, and I was rigid in the beginning. I still have some rigidity, and I still get angry, and we still have problems kind of like meshing our schedules to get together for the holidays and things like that. But I have so much more compassion, and I really care about his happiness, you know, and I try to make that come through.
And there's a certain amount of compromise that needs to happen in every family, but it seems like it was more heightened in this situation.
Well, because I'm mouthy and opinionated. And argumentative, you know, I have all my bad qualities, you know, when you're in a situation that's new.
So intimate, too.
Yeah, and then your bad qualities can be exaggerated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm a know-it-all, you know, all the bad stuff.
Well, I totally relate to that. But let's hear a little bit of your essay. What section do you want to read?
I'm going to read from the beginning, which describes my upbringing, which was quite different from my partner's and his son's.
And this is Dispatches from Neverland.
I came from a large family of blurters and big mouths. We offer unsolicited opinions and advice and hold forth on topics idle and large. We talk and sometimes shout over each other. We don't listen much as we bluster along, can be especially shrill when it comes to politics, and hold grudges long and hard. Most of my growing up years were spent in a small northern town, flanked by countryside, lakes and forest. It was a place of endless summers, long silent months of snow, and night skies like a magic show. I was a reader and a make-believe girl, carving kingdoms and homes from leaves and ferns, clothespins and old bedsheets, paper scraps and dreams. But mostly I was an outdoor girl, adventuring on my red Schwinn, swimming every afternoon in summer until the steamy dog days of August, and ice skating every day in winter. Along with my sisters and brother and a gang of neighborhood kids, I played into the grassy twilight while firelights twinkled like fairies in the night. Mostly I roamed and imagined. The white pine forest and singing waters were my haven, my Neverland. It was a green and magical place, far from grown-ups, far from cares. That yesterday self has always dwelt in me.
You can keep reading. I love this.
All right, I want to switch.
Is there another section?
I want to switch to about when I met my partner for a minute. They say opposites attract. I say opposites have lots to argue about. Our differences stem from our childhoods and the vastly different ways we were raised. My parents were beyond strict. They were the law, and we were taught to be workers. On the other hand, John's mother doted on him, would call him three times a day when he went to college. Growing up, he had few rules, obligations, or chores, things I considered normal child raising. When we met, John's hobbies were games and television. His sedentary ways, along with a steady diet of pizza, French fries, and cheeseburgers, suggested to me a cardiac incident by age 60. Our biggest differences were our diets and lifestyles, and I believe they came from an indoor childhood versus an outdoor childhood. I'm a make-mine food or organic foodie. I eat my vegetables. He has avoided them all his life. And although John holds a responsible government job and we share similar values, his lifestyle seemed like a warped Neverland, not my childhood version, where the sunlight shimmers through the trees, casting the world an emerald. Instead, it's a place where you never grow up, never eat broccoli, your freezer's stocked with pizza and sausage biscuits, you drink soda by the quart, stay up until all hours playing computer games, sprawl on the couch for marathon Ninja Warrior TV watching on weekends, and don't bother with housework or exercise. Opposites. But he makes me laugh, he's wizard smart, and no one has understood or loved me so thoroughly.
So opposite, isn't it? So at what point did it seem like your stepfamily became a family? You know, there's stepfamily versus family.
I think it's when you start sharing holidays. That's what it is for me, because holidays, my family was poor and holidays were magical. My parents really went all out. They would buy us Christmas presents, for instance, and pay them off all year long from their pennies and Montgomery Wards accounts, you know. And so when we started, you know, we started blending our holidays, and with, you know, Jay's father and his stepmother and his son too.
Well, what does Jay and his son think of your essay? Have they read it?
No, and I don't even know if.
Do you want them to read it?
That's a good question. At first, I didn't, but now, because I think I've shown so much growth in our relationship, and because I believe the essay is honest, it's fine if they read
it. Well, at the end, it really comes together as far as your own acceptance, and I think your realization. And I think if they can make it to then, it seems like that would. You know, mm-hmm. That would be okay.
Well, and I take a lot of blame. You know, I had to, because I wanted to be kind of like the mother, the smart mother. You know, and you know, I know now that my relationship with his son needs to be more of a friend. You know, more of a caring adult.
I think that's always the difficulty is when you're writing personal stories, especially about families, or, you know, about how the family members will react, you know, to it. And that's such a hard thing. Have you had that response, Samantha, with, you know, other writers and whether or not they've shared that with their families?
We've dealt with that a lot. We started out, interestingly, we have at least one pen name, and we started out with several, and then the writers decided they wanted to use their name, claim their story, be part of Seal's anthology, and I've honored that. We've also had that in the promotion. We've had some families have pretty strong reactions, and families have worked through that in different ways.
It's very challenging and
very challenging.
You are vulnerable when you write these. Your family's also vulnerable too.
No, and I've really worked. I've been an absolute advocate for their privacy. If they didn't want their name in the local paper, we absolutely honored that. Seal and our publicist Eva Zimmerman honored that along with me, because they are sharing something so deep and sometimes really painful.
Yeah, it's much more different. I mean, it's different from writing, say, you know, a short story where nothing is recognizable.
Memoirs deal with this issue, yeah. Jessica teaches about it in her wonderful workshops. Every essayist has to choose how much they're going to tell and how much they're not going to tell, you know, a great story that's never going to see the light because you choose not to do that,
right,
or you choose to do it.
Can I just say something? But if you don't risk as a writer, you know, when you're telling about your own story, you're not going to get something worth reading. You know, it's about risk.
And there's a great quote that I think Jamie Ford posted on Facebook that I save on my desktop. It's something to the effect of, you know, if they didn't want to be written about, they shouldn't have behaved so badly.
and Lamont said that. Yes.
Oh, was it? So it's a repost. But yeah, I thought, you know, it's a little bit callous, but a little bit true. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's to the point. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio, and I'm talking with Jessica Page Morrell and writer and editor Samantha. Well, it's both writers and editors, but about the book Blended: Writers on the Step Family Experience, and we are, you know, talking about what that means. And I was having a conversation actually yesterday with a friend at lunch who made an interesting point about families of color who don't necessarily think in terms of step. It's either family, you know, it's just family. It's not step families. And actually, I was reading that 2011 Pew survey, and they basically said that 61% of, I think African Americans have 61% step families or blended families. And I thought that was interesting in the sense of not even thinking in terms of what step is. It's just family, you know. And have you had that experience with especially communities of color?
I've had that with across the board writers that approached me with their stories. Some of them found the word step offensive and made sure that we really cleared up their title and however they were writing about it. So I think it may very well be extra true. I think of that community, but across the board, there are people who actually walk in the door and maybe they've never had a child and they're so grateful. Or I would expect the Hispanic community also to not have that term even.
Yeah, I think the statistic on that was about 46%, I believe. So it's a higher percentage of step families.
Their families are so extended and welcoming. And in my experience,
I also think in terms of just numbers, when you are, you know, quote unquote, a minority or, you know, a community of color, you want to embrace as many members as possible, you know. So I think that's a different way of looking at it. So maybe an idea for blended too. I'm just pitching that to you right now.
No, and I had stories. I really wanted an international flavor also.
Because you know, it would be different, wouldn't it?
I have. Yeah. Well, and I had one that didn't make it into the final just for several reasons, but was fabulous in that was Vietnamese. And I'm really glad that we have the Indian wedding, India-Indian wedding, and that we have Emma Kate Tsai's story of the influence
There's
of
some really
Chinese culture.
Yeah.
But yes, oh my gosh, I want to do a blended too so badly.
There you
badly.
Go. See, I knew you did.
I do. Yeah. I want a lot more stepfathers.
Right.
Bio fathers. I worked to get those, and men are more reticent. They're fabulous writers, whether they're making the, I don't know.
Whether they want to go there or not is another issue. Right.
But anyway, yes, I have lots of ideas for blended too. So
well, I just want to do a shout out for some of the Portland writers. The other Portland writers in here too is Melissa Hart, Cynthia Whitcomb, Gigi Rosenberg. Are there some other writers? I think
Carrie Cohen, James Bernard Frost. Of course, we have Jessica with us. Elena Smith is local.
And Deborah Stone too.
Deb Stone is local. Yeah.
So a lot of great people to celebrate. So it seems like you need to have another reading here in Portland, right?
We do. Pals was great, though. It was like 12 of us got to share our stories.
Wonderful.
In little bits.
Well, so we're coming to the close here, and I just want to know, what was the toughest story for you to edit in Blended?
Toughest in what way?
In any way. It could be emotionally, it could be, you know, probably emotionally. Let's go with that.
Emotionally, the toughest story. I think the toughest story was actually a story that didn't get in. Not just for, it was published somewhere else first, but it was about a bio mom and a daughter, and then a stepdaughter comes in, and how the daughter feels so bad that the stepdaughter treats the mother like zero. Like, and again, we didn't use the story because it was put out in it, still a self-published book, but still published first. But that one really got to me, what that must be like to see your mother treated as a cipher by the step-sibling on top of all your other adjustments.
And it also seems like the toughest job for you is probably turning down so many people.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And some of them are really dear friends.
Well, and Jessica, as an editor yourself, I'm sure you relate to that experience too.
Well, I edited a book called Voices from the Street, which is about the homeless population in Portland. And it was sponsored by the Sisters of the Road Cafe. I worked on it for 3 years. There were, I think, 19,000 pages of transcripts that I was combing through. And by the time I was done, and we finally did have our coming out party, it was published and we were at Powell's and all that, I got up to give the talk, you know, about my experiences doing it. And there were a lot of homeless people in the audience. And I said to them, I want to thank you for your beautiful lives. And after that, I could barely talk. I was choking on tears the rest of the time because all the emotions of that experience and all their sadness and their difficulties and their terrible outcomes and their mistakes just hit me like a storm.
Well, we have to go now, but that must have been amazing, an experience. Samantha Waltz, Jessica Page Morrell, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about Blended Writers on the Step Family Experience. Thank you so much. And you can find out more about it at stageandstudio.org. I have a link at Samantha's site, pathsofthought.com. And thanks so much for joining me today. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can hear the show again at stageandstudio.org. And you can find me also on facebook.com/stage, the letter N studio, or tweet me at stage, the letter N studio, and I'll have the podcast up on iTunes as well as stationstudio.org later today. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going to go out with more music from Gillicuddy at the freemusicarchive.org.
Louis de Bruges died at age 17. He left behind a treasure trove of original music, lyrics, and poetry. Free as the Sun is a multimedia project to keep Lou's voice alive and to give voice to one brilliant young man's experience of traumatic childhood abuse and his sorrows as he struggled with addiction. Listen to an interview by Delphine Crescenzo of Rhonda Case, Louis' mother, about this project online at kboo.fm/freeasthesun. That's kboo.fm/freeasthesun.